This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Tech World, Undying Mercenaries, Book 3. Written by B.V. Larson, performed by Mark Boyette. Definitions from the only hegemony-approved civics textbook. The Galactic Empire. The greatest governmental system ever conceived. The Empire encompasses 61% of the star systems in our Milky Way galaxy and lays valid claim to the rest. The Empire is an achievement all civilized species admire, and it has persisted for many millennia. Every man, woman, and child on Earth is proud to be a member of this immense society. The Core Systems. At the center of our galaxy is a supermassive black hole. Orbiting this dense mass are the oldest of suns, clusters of stars in close proximity. Known as the Core Systems, all the elder races rose to power in this brilliantly lit region of space. The Galactics. The Core Systems are inhabited by an unknown number of superior species known as Galactics. Ancient and wise, these benevolent beings guide thousands of lesser civilizations in unimportant star systems. One of these minor civilizations developed upon Earth and calls itself humanity. Earth's government. Humanity's modern government is called hegemony, with sector, district, and local sub-governments. Earth is managed locally by a political collective. Independent nations no longer exist on our world, and as everyone knows, that is a very good thing. Earth's monetary system. Due to imperial benevolence, every world in the Empire is self-governing. Only interstellar interactions are imperially governed, as they should be. Earth's monetary system was established to promote commerce. Two tiers of credit units exist: hegemony credits and galactic credits. Hegemony credits are valid for any interaction between humans in our star systems, while galactic credits are valued for trade anywhere within the Empire. Typical exchange rates place the value of a single galactic credit at well over 1,000 hegemony credits. Galactic credits are required to purchase alien-made trade goods. The NERBs. The NERBs are alien bureaucrats who serve the Galactics with unswerving loyalty. Their bulbous bodies are deceptive. There's no escape from their relentless pursuit of justice. All potential wrongdoers are hereby forewarned. The faithful NERBs exercise the will of the distant Galactics with zealotry. For them, no ruling is too unjust, no technicality too arcane. They prosecute the smallest infractions, following the letter of every law, precisely as it is written. Frontier 921. Our star system drifts within the boundaries of Frontier 921, an outlying province. It's an unimportant backwater of the Empire, located in the Orion Spur of the Perseus arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Despite our insignificance, humanity must strive to serve our betters with enthusiasm. Battle Fleet 921. Our local battle fleet is perhaps the most amazing of the many gifts our beloved Empire has bestowed upon us. Consisting of 1,000 vast ships, the fleet has only visited Earth once, to our good fortune. On that thrilling day in the year 2051, the fleet silvered our skies as they do any planet they visit. Provincial battle fleets are normally tasked with delivering ultimatums of annexation to newly discovered civilizations, or charged with punishing those that fail to obey the Galactics. Both missions are necessary tasks to maintain order and expand the rule of law. Battle Fleet 921 possesses the weaponry to reduce any world in the province to ash. but to obedient beings, it represents a comforting, protective strength. Recent addendum. Unfortunately, Battlefleet 921 has been recalled to the core system to help resolve unspecified disturbances. Humanity's faithful service. As a level 2 civilization within the glorious empire, we've recently been awarded the title of local enforcers and tasked with maintaining order inside the borders of Frontier 921. The local battle fleet may no longer be available to support our efforts, but we will soldier on determinedly. Earth's legions. Maintaining a century-old tradition, Earth's spacefaring legions still march to the stars, serving the highest bidder. Legion Varus. The most notorious of all Earth's legions, Varus is often maligned by the press and the rest of our military. It's unknown exactly what purpose they serve, but it is understood that they perform missions no other legion would care to undertake. I love honor more than I fear death. Julius Caesar, 51 B.C. Chapter 1. I was born on Earth, a craptastic planet in the middle of Frontier 921. We were about as far from the core systems at the center of our galaxy as you could get, and therefore we were about as unimportant as a civilization could be within the Galactic Empire. When Galactics visited us, which they rarely did, they invariably complained about how cold and dark it was out here along the Perseus Arm. Our solitary sun was dim and dull to them, as they were creatures accustomed to the nearness of 1,000 ancient stars. As far as they were concerned, we lived in a desert, light years from the next stellar source of heat and life. I didn't care what the Galactics thought about Earth. It was my home, and I loved her. The Imperial types always made a point of sneering at our relative poverty and pathetic tech as well. But that didn't bother me. Throughout my short lifespan, my family and I had been carving out a low-wage living on our backwater world. It was only over the last year or so that we'd gathered enough hard-worn credits to begin enjoying ourselves. From my point of view, things were looking up. My parents had managed to get real jobs again, and new hope. As soon as they could manage it, they took their scraped-together fortune and left Atlanta. They moved to the Georgia countryside, down around Waycross. They couldn't afford much land, but managed to find a freestanding place with a few overgrown acres around it. The house was more than a century old, and the scrubland looked like no one had farmed or even trimmed it for nearly that long. What surprised me the most was the structure itself, which was built with actual wood. I didn't believe it until I went down into the basement and ran my hands over the bare, splintery stuff myself. The best part of moving out of the city and into the sticks was that I got my own room out of the deal. It wasn't a bedroom, not exactly. It was more like a freestanding shed, which had been converted into a living space at some point in the distant past. It wasn't a palace, mind you. Curling, faded polymer strips were tacked to the walls as decorations, and the floorboards creaked enough to wake the dead. But I really liked it. I moved in and made myself right at home. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a freeloading bandit. I'd chipped in plenty of my own cash, and my folks were glad to have me staying on with them. Like most enlisted legionnaires, I didn't want to be bothered with permanent housing on Earth. So far, I'd been deployed something like 9 months out of every year on average, and when I was left dirt side by the Legion for an extended shore leave with 1/3 pay, I didn't have the credits or the gumption to set up a permanent residence of my own. I knew that at any time, the Legion might muster out again and take me to the stars to work a new contract. We Legionnaires never knew how long we had with our feet on the ground, so we didn't bother to play house unless we had a family. And as of yet, I didn't. So, in late spring, I lived with my folks and whiled away my free time. For me, vid games were now a thing of the past. I'd been spoiled by real life, real beer, and real women. Games couldn't hold my attention like they used to. In June, I became obsessed with constructing an unlicensed floater in my room. When the damn thing worked right, the floater was a lot of fun. It wasn't much, just a surfboard with a simple gravity-repelling unit attached. A second-hand repeller had about a 300-kilo lift rating, which was enough to get me almost a half-meter up off the ground. Repeller units were easy to come by these days, as Earth had credits, and alien traders now visited our planet with regularity. They no longer treated us like third-rate losers. In the eyes of the traders, we'd risen to the status of first-class hicks. I hugely enjoyed cruising around the back lot on my floater, taking it out over the local Satilla River with a drink in one hand and a steering wire in the other. It was fun, and the summer passed quickly. Now and then I was even lucky enough to coax a few lady friends into accompanying me back to my tiny shack. They always crossed my threshold diffidently, like house cats that suspected you were taking them to the vet. After a couple of strong drinks and a ride or two on my makeshift floater, they usually spent the night. After 3 months of wasting time and money, I had to admit I was becoming a little bored. It was August, and anyone who spent much time in Georgia can tell you that hanging around in a converted garage in the last days of summer can get to be a little extreme. I'd gotten into the habit of leaving the cooling unit blowing at night, but it had begun overheating and throwing breakers. I didn't want to waste credits on a new one, as it might be years before I'd use it again after this shore leave was over. Left with nothing better than a whirring fan, I made the best of it. I kept the windows open, the lights dim, and the fan aimed so it blew directly on my sweating skin. It was comfortable enough once you got used to it. One Thursday night in August, a tapping sound began as someone tapped on my door. I was dozing, and it must have been around midnight. I startled awake, spilling fresh beer on my heavily stained carpet. "Shit," I muttered, hauling myself up. I shook my head and padded on bare feet to the door. I automatically assumed it was my mom, coming out to ask me something that could easily wait until morning, like whether or not I thought we needed more milk for breakfast. Lifting a hand to the door, I paused. I could see through my half-assed window screens, and I noted with surprise that the tiny light over my parents' back door was out. That wasn't surprising in and of itself, as lights in the country attracted more bugs than anything else. But if it was my mom on the other side of my door, tapping insistently, wouldn't she have flipped on her porch light to guide her on her way across the yard? Frowning, I put my hand on the rattling, worn-out doorknob. Yeah, my shed had real, honest-to-God doorknobs. They must have been a century or more old. But I hesitated. The tapping sound repeated itself. I considered ignoring it. Tap, tap, tap. I shrugged and threw open the door. In the same sudden motion, I flicked on the light. I don't know who I'd expected to see standing outside, but I was surprised it was Natasha. "Hi," she said, looking nervous. She tried to smile, but it flickered out. I'm not very good when I'm surprised. I don't have an automatic happy-time grin on my face when the unexpected happens. Maybe that's because I've been killed a lot. I don't know. The Legion Sykes gave us a course on that kind of stuff before every deployment, droning on about the long-term effects of our chosen occupation, but I'd never listened to any of it. Natasha took in the blank look on my face and my lack of a greeting and reacted in the worst possible way. Her smile vanished, and she did a U-turn. "Sorry," she snapped. "I shouldn't have crashed your party." Head held high, she marched away into the dark. She took about 3 quick steps back toward the main road. I could see the dark hulk of her car out there, skids down on the pavement. "Hey, come back," I called, half laughing. "You surprised me, that's all." She looked over her shoulder and paused. "You've got someone in there, don't you?" "Nope. Not even that damn tomcat that keeps coming around. Frowning slightly, she came back to my door and craned her neck to look past me. It's awfully dark in there. Don't you have any lights? The cooler is broken, I said. Lights make heat, and besides, I was just falling asleep. She looked into my eyes again. Maybe I should come back in the morning. I reached out and touched her arm. I didn't grab her, I just rested my hand on her elbow. Beckoning with my other hand, I gestured toward my couch. Come on in. Natasha stood still, but her eyes were running over me and everything else. I was a mess, and so was my place. I'm the kind of guy who shoves everything into the closet when a girl comes over, but I hadn't expected one tonight. I let go of her arm, heaved a deep breath, and walked to my crappy little box fridge. I'd gotten it from a Legion surplus shop for cheap. I grabbed out a beer and cracked it open. I didn't even bother to look at Natasha. Maybe it was the heat or the time of night, but I was done feeding this park squirrel peanuts. She could come in or go. She finally came in. I handed her a fresh brew and found her a place on my couch to sit down. The first thing she did was notice my floater, which I was using for a coffee table.
There aren't any legs on your table, she said.
Yeah, cool, isn't it?
You spent money on repellers just to build a table?
I laughed.
No, it's a vehicle. I fly it everywhere. It's great fun. If you're around tomorrow, I'll give you a ride to the lake.
Natasha gave me a reproachful glance at the mention of her being around in the morning, but I pretended not to notice. She and I had had a thing going for years now. We'd never been in a really tight relationship, but we'd enjoyed a number of fine nights.
Your place smells a little moldy, she commented.
Sorry. Hey, you want to tell me why you came all the way out here to see me?
I wanted to know how you're going to vote.
I frowned, having no idea what she was talking about. I'm not much into politics. Is there a district election I should know about? She laughed. I liked her best when she laughed. Her face lost all caution and worries during those few seconds, and that made me smile.
I'm talking about the Legion vote, she said. You must have made your decision by now. You're kidding me, she exclaimed, setting aside her beer. You turned off your tapper again, didn't you? What if they summon us to the hall?
I lifted my arm so she could see the tapper embedded there. I poked at it, and it came reluctantly to life, making my skin glow with organic subcutaneous molecular shifts. I did some mods, I admitted. You're the tech. Check it out. I showed her my custom settings. I'd blocked out all non-critical span from the Legion and from everyone else.
That's against regulations, she complained.
It's my shore leave, I said. You techs should appreciate that. If the Legion really wants me, they can get me with a priority message. In the meantime, anything non-critical gets dumped. Natasha shook her head and made clucking noises with her tongue as she tapped at my arm. Hey, I complained. Don't mess up my settings.
I didn't touch your settings, she said. I just brought up today's report. Check it out. Top of the list.
I sighed and grumbled as I scrolled around with my index finger on the inside of my forearm. I tapped at a Legion-wide announcement and read what it said aloud. Friday night, 8 p.m. is the deadline for voting. As a specialist, you're allowed 2 votes as per Legion bylaws. If you've abdicated, you're... I frowned and stopped reading. I looked at Natasha. What the hell are we voting on?
To join hegemony,
she said in exasperation.
All of us?
Yeah, she said.
All of us. All the Legions have been given the option. We can either stay independent, or we can sign on with Earth's Central Command.
What brought this on? She laughed, but this time I thought her laugh was tinged with bitterness.
If I had to guess, I'd say you brought it on, James McGill. You talked the Narbs into making us enforcers, remember? Yeah, sure, I said. But what's that got to do with folding Legion Varus into hegemony?
She shrugged.
I guess as enforcers, Earth has a new source of credits, a new service we provide to the Empire. We don't all have to play mercenaries to the stars anymore, and hegemony expects to be called upon to do some enforcing at some point by the NERVs, or even by the core systems. Hegemony needs experienced troops.
Experienced troops? I echoed. That's us. The independent legions. There's no one else who's been out there.
Exactly.
I thought about the situation for a time. The more I thought about it, the less happy I was. I didn't want to join up with hegemony. Those guys were self-important pukes.
What if we say no?
I asked her.
I don't know, she admitted. No one does. They might disband us. Or they might hire us and send us out anyway. No one really knows how this is all going to go down.
One thing's for sure, I said, beginning to work my tapper. Earth isn't getting all these credits from the Galactics for us to sit on our hands. They'll want us to do something soon.
Natasha nodded, then frowned as I kept working my tapper steadily. She scooted her butt over the couch to see what I was doing, and I let her. I'd gone into my settings first and done a full reset. When it booted back up, I tapped in a message and selected the send all option. It questioned my sanity, and I confirmed the choice twice. I hit the final acknowledgement before she could stop me. Her tapper beeped, and she opened the message I'd just sent to her and everyone else in the Legion. Her jaw sagged.
You're crazy, she whispered. You can't do that. You can't spam the entire Legion at midnight.
I just did. Natasha read my message on her own arm while I downed the rest of my beer and got out two new ones. When I returned to the couch, she waved me away at first, but after a few seconds of reading, she took the second beer and guzzled it. She shook her head and laughed. Then she began reading the note again, out loud this time.
As one of only two individuals in this Legion who was personally involved in negotiating Earth's new status, I urge my fellow Legionnaires to reject hegemony's offer. Let's stay independent and free rather than chained up by sanctimonious dirt-siders who think they know the stars better than we do. Specialist James McGill, Legion Varus.
It's just one man's opinion, I said, shrugging. Natasha laughed again and drank. I joined her.
I didn't have to come all the way down here to know your answer, did I? She asked. All I had to do was think about you, and I would have known how you were voting.
Somehow my arm had snaked its way around her shoulders. She sat up close to me, and I could feel her warmth. Usually I avoided warmth of any kind in August, but this was different.
You're going to get into trouble, she said.
I scoffed.
What are they going to do? Kill me?
It was a favorite joke of all the Legionnaires, and it never failed to garner a bit of a chuckle from our fellows. We often died in the field, but we almost always were returned to life. That sounded great, until after you went through the agony and helpless terror of dying a few times. Natasha and I ended up making love on that grungy couch. We fell asleep immediately afterward. Outside, the katydids buzzed and the fireflies floated on warm, humid air between mossy trees.
Chapter 2. The Georgia dawn pinked the skies several hours later. I was startled awake when a fist hammered on my shack's door, rattling the windows. Natasha and I were entangled. We separated and stood up. Natasha grabbed a shirt and pressed it over her bare breasts. It wasn't smart cloth, so it didn't cover her very well.
"Who's there?" I said gruffly, stepping to the door. Automatically, I stood to one side. Natasha hadn't moved or said anything. She was just watching me.
"Open up, McGill. Military police."
Frowning, I threw open the door.
Natasha pulled more clothes on quickly, but I stood there in boxers, uncaring. Outside, there were three men. The two in front were beefy, one well-built and the other one with a gut that overflowed his belt buckle. In the rear was a thin man with only a few wisps of curly hair around his balding head. He had eyes like a possum. It was the thin man in the back who spoke up first.
"What kind of shithole is this, McGill?"
he asked me. His eyes cruised around my humble home.
"We were led to believe you were a specialist, but I'm seeing an inbred knuckle-dragger in a stinking shack. I'll have to report back that we visited the wrong damned man."
I nodded to him. "That's right," I said. "He came to the wrong house." I began to swing the door closed into their faces. A hand shot out and stopped it.
"You're under arrest, funny man," the fat one said.
I took a second to take in their uniforms and ranks. They were hegemony. The patches on their shoulders depicting blue-green globes told me that. Judging by their other insignia, the front two were regulars, probably reservists called up for active duty. Since Earth had been announced as an enforcement branch for the Empire, hegemony had panicked and mobilized every reservist they had. The thin guy in back was older and wore a specialist's markings. They were all security detail, MPs.
"Arrest?"
I asked.
"What's the charge?"
"You'll be briefed in the station in Atlanta," the thin specialist snapped.
"Come with us. Wait, who's that with you?"
"A friend," I said, glancing back at Natasha. She still hadn't spoken. All three men leered for a moment at Natasha. This annoyed me. Her legs were bare and my T-shirt didn't cover everything else. It was the first thing in the morning and I hadn't been arrested for months, especially with good cause and paperwork. The situation struck me as wrong somehow.
"This is about the message I sent last night, isn't it?"
I asked.
"Who signed the arrest order?"
"Are you coming willingly or are you coming in manacles?"
"I'm not hegemony," I told them. "I'm Varys. We're independent. Send some MPs for my legion and I'll go wherever they take me."
"I think you fail to grasp the situation," the leader said, shaking his head with mock sadness.
"This is a priority arrest, and I have my orders."
"Screw your orders," I said, becoming angry. "They're illegal. You don't have any jurisdiction here. Get district cops or my own MPs. You can't come here and demand I submit to arrest without any authority to back you up."
The skinny guy finally stopped ogling Natasha and glared at me.
"You off-world types always think you're hot shit, don't you?"
he asked.
"Well, all that's over with now. It's time you became accustomed to new masters. Gentlemen, arrest this—"
I slammed my door in their faces and threw my shoulder into it. I'm a large man, easily larger and stronger than any of these dirt-siders, but there were three of them. The door bucked against my shoulder and daylight flashed through the crack a moment later. I heard cursing and one of them shoved a truncheon through the opening.
"What the hell are they doing?"
Natasha hissed at me.
"Climb out of one of the back windows. I don't like this and I'm not letting these jokers arrest you too."
"You're holding them off for me?"
she asked, surprised. The door bucked harder than ever, and I was jostled backward. I almost lost my stance, but managed to get myself set again. The truncheon sticking into my shed crackled with energy. The bastard holding it had switched it on. I looked at Natasha.
"Go on, will you?"
She shook her head and stood behind the door.
"You're going to need a witness."
I growled in frustration. Timing my next move with their next shove, I threw the door open again. The fat guy fell onto his face at my feet, and his sidekick staggered in surprise. The thin leader in the back was breathing hard and baring his teeth. They hadn't been in a great mood at the start, and now they were truly pissed. I took a step or two backward, and they rushed me. Forever afterward, I'll never be sure why I decided to resist them. I guess it's because I knew they were in the wrong, and abusing their authority. Sometimes that happened with cops of any kind. I understood they didn't have easy jobs, but these guys had rubbed me the wrong way. I wasn't thinking anymore at this point. I was reacting, violently.
There's something different in the way a star man faces a fight after he's died a dozen times, or 100. It starts with an odd expression Legionnaires call the dead man's stare. Maybe the look comes to Legionnaires because we've been gifted with an unnatural knowledge of death. I've had many bitter experiences that should have been forbidden to the living, but which to a man like me had become almost familiar.
"Don't do it, James,"
Natasha said, reading my state of mind accurately.
"I'll be fine."
I didn't even look at her. I didn't really hear her either. My eyes were wide with the shining whites revealed all around. My face was otherwise strangely blank. Only my staring orbs revealed the intensity of my mood. Now don't get me wrong, I was pissed, but it was a different kind of pissed. I was in a cold state, with full certainty of mind. I had a confidence in battle that these others couldn't possess. The fat guy climbed to his feet and stepped forward, his face sweating and his eyes blazing. He lifted his truncheon and it sizzled with energy. One touch would numb a limb and daze the mind, but I ignored the weapon, concentrating instead on the man who held it. The start of the fight wasn't fair, not really. But then fighting isn't usually about fairness, not to my kind, the brethren of the walking dead. As Fat Boy took his first steps in my direction, with his sizzling shock stick in hand, my foot snapped out, kicking the floater I used as a coffee table. Gliding through the air with great force, the floater caught the MP in the side of the knee, a bad spot. There was a double crack, and he went down on his face, keening.
"Crazy redneck!"
he moaned from the floor. The second guy at least looked like he worked out. I stepped to meet him as he dropped his truncheon and reached to his belt to drag his sidearm free. A gun. That raised the stakes. I knew they might well kill me now, but I hardly cared at that moment. If I killed just one of them, that man was going to endure his first death with all the associated terror and pain. As hegemony men, the MPs had been copied and stored the same as I was, but their first death experience would linger with them for the rest of their lives. To me, a death was like a bad day in the dentist's chair. Nothing to look forward to, but hardly life-changing. The way I looked at it, as long as I killed at least one of them, I'd won this fight.
"Shit, James, shit!"
Natasha said. But she joined the fight when she saw the guy reaching for his gun. She stepped to the thin specialist and kicked the guy while he lingered in the doorway. She missed his balls, but nailed his narrow gut. The specialist reached for her, and the two struggled. She tried to trip him and almost managed it. I had to admire her pluck. She was a tech specialist, not really a line combatant. He finally straight-armed her, and she flew right into my toolbox, which crashed to the floor. Her attack hadn't been spectacular, but she'd managed to briefly distract them. The muscular goon glanced back to see what was going on with the group's commander, and I took the opportunity to arm myself. Another behavioral trait that's often shared by men like myself was a tendency to hide weapons around our residences. We typically collected guns, knives, just about anything that could be used to perform a violent act. I've read that people who've experienced starvation are forever afterward fascinated by food and tended to hoard it. I was like them in my own way. I reached into the couch cushions and drew a machete from underneath them. When I'd bought that blade, I'd told myself it was to chop down the brush on my parents' back lot. But part of me had known better. I'd bought it and never used it until this very day. I'd oiled it and slid it under the couch cushions, but I'd never swung it at a bush or anything else. The muscular man's hand didn't come off, but it was missing two fingers about half a second later. It's hard to handle a gun with a thumb and two fingers. Just try it sometime. He lost his grip on the weapon, and it clattered to the floor. I scooped it up and straightened. The thin man at the door finally had his weapon out and held it with shaking hands. He still stood in the doorway, framed by the pink light of dawn.
"This has gone far enough, McGill," he shouted. "There's no reason for any of this bullshit. Drop that gun and come in with us."
"There are plenty of reasons for this," I said calmly. I held the gun, but didn't level it at the man in the doorway. He had the drop on me, after all,
and I didn't want to take the first bullet. Instead, I held the gun out to my side. Crawling at my feet was the man with the missing fingers. He picked the digits up and was trying to wrap them in a tissue he'd pulled out of his pocket. I could have told him it wasn't worth the effort. The man with the broken knees seemed to be in the most pain. He had gone white from shock and slid himself over to lean back against my box-shaped fridge. His breathing came in hitches and gasps, but at least he wasn't screeching anymore.
"Put down the gun, specialist,"
the man standing in my doorway said.
"This is insane. You're under arrest, and you'll come with us, dead or alive."
"You had no warrant," I said. "You had no cause. You came in kicking and pushing. You can't treat a Legion man like that. Don't they teach you hogs anything?"
Hogs was an especially rude term some Legionnaires applied to hegemony people. The man's face purpled slightly. I would have thought he was too freaked out to care much about insults, but I would have thought wrong.
"All right," he said, anger taking over again. "We're supposed to bring you in alive. That's a firm order. But no one said anything about her."
He turned his gun on Natasha, who glared and winced away. The second the thin man's gun was off me, I shot the man with the bad knee, the guy who was resting against my fridge. I'd chosen him first because the gun in my hand was aimed in his direction to start with. I aimed low, mostly because I didn't want to wreck my fridge. His chest popped red, and he sagged down in surprise. I was annoyed to see the shot had gone right through him and ruined my fridge after all. Damn. The man in the doorway forgot about Natasha and swung his weapon back in my direction. That was a good move because my gun was swinging toward him. We both fired and staggered back. He fell out into the yard and lay there coughing. He might pull through, but I hoped not. I was on my back now, and I knew from experience I'd been hurt bad. When you're bleeding out, it's a funny feeling. By funny, I mean a sick feeling. Your vision really does go black, strobing in and out with your heartbeat, dimming more each beat. The man with two missing fingers got to his knees and loomed over me, staring into my face.
"Why the hell did you do this?" he demanded.
"You ask yourself that," I wheezed, "when the revival machine is crapping you out in about an hour. Maybe you'll figure it out then."
Then I shot him in the head, and we both died.
Chapter 3.
There are a few funny things that people have to understand about revival machines and how they operate in order to understand what happened later that same hot Friday in Georgia. Our bodies are only backed up occasionally, starting with the day you're recruited. When you're brought back to life, you usually came back as you were on the day your cells were copied, at least physically. There are exceptions to this, however. If you needed corrective surgery of some kind, or if you improved your physique with exercise and training, you might back up your body's cellular scans afterward to ensure you return to life later in the best possible condition. The mind of a Legionnaire is recorded separately. It's done with incremental backups, transcribing only the changes to our neural nets. This process is done far more regularly so that we can remember our training and life events. Usually our tappers do the job of transcription. If they're within range of a transceiver relay unit, they'll upload the data concerning our neural networks quite often, every minute or so. That's how we can recall the circumstances of our own deaths. The only living witness to the debacle that had occurred in my little shack was tech specialist Natasha Elkin. She knew me, and I thought sometimes she might even love me a little. Whatever her true feelings were, she covered for me that morning. Natasha was a tech and a good one. She hacked all three of the dead hegemony prick's tappers, dumping their last uploads. The exact circumstances of their deaths were therefore recorded in her mind and restored in mine, but the hegemony pukes had forgotten the dramatic finish. They knew they'd come to my place. They knew they'd pushed their way in and argued.
but they had no idea how they died or who had been at fault. When an alien machine in downtown Atlanta gave birth to me once again, there was already a hegemony squad waiting on site to arrest me. Fortunately, I was taken by surprise. Stumbling and naked, I had just long enough to read a private message from Natasha on my tapper before they hauled me away to a holding cell. "Stay cool, stay dumb, no memories," her message read. I swiped my numb fingers over the text, and the words erased themselves, lost in the mysteries of the net. I allowed myself a small smile. Playing dumb comes easily to me. Some say it's my only natural skill. The hegemony MPs held me, and they grilled me, but they eventually gave up. As far as they could determine, I didn't remember a damned thing. At least, no more than the other three dead men did. Only Natasha's story of three amateur hour MPs pawing her and abusing her boyfriend was left behind to fill in the gaps. The memory loss was blamed on bad net service in the region, a believable enough excuse. Even I could testify to that much of the cover story. By the end of a very long day, I had a uniform issued to me, and I was told Natasha had driven up from Waycross to pick me up. There were mumbled curses from the hegemony people at the Atlanta station as I was discharged from custody. I accepted their irritable behavior magnanimously and left in high spirits. Natasha and I left the building as soon as we could get away, but at the exit door, which was powered, barred, and crisscrossed with wired glass, we were met by three familiar faces. I drew myself up and stiffened, but they held their hands high, palms out, in an apologetic gesture.
"Look, McGill,"
began the skinny, balding specialist. For the first time, I noticed his name was Turner. I hadn't bothered to read his name badge while he was assaulting me in my home.
"Look," he repeated, we're all here to say we're sorry, for what that's worth. We don't know what went wrong at your place, but I think we can all agree that we've paid a price for it. Whatever happened."
I stood stock still, enjoying their discomfort for several seconds.
"I can accept your apology, Turner," I said finally. I turned to Natasha. "As to pressing charges, only Natasha here knows what really happened to her. She was assaulted, as I understand it."
Natasha locked eyes with me for a second, then turned to the three men in question. She drew in a breath and spoke.
"I hope you gentlemen understand we are all Legionnaires. We shouldn't let our petty rivalries pull us apart.
We all serve the same world in the end."
"Yes, ma'am," said the fat guy eagerly. "We're really sorry for anything we did."
"You paid a horrid price," she said, looking at each of them with pity in her eyes. "You all died screaming. Turner, you even shit yourself at the end."
Turner's eyes narrowed, making him look even less pleasant than usual. The other two fidgeted with their hats.
"Under the circumstances, I won't press charges," Natasha said finally.
They were all visibly relieved.
"Thank you, ma'am," Fat Boy said. "And for the record, I don't understand how this all could have gotten so out of..."
Natasha put up a hand and they stopped talking instantly.
"Try to control yourselves in the future," she advised,
and we pressed past them. I held my laughter until we reached her car. Natasha started up the car with a thrum, and we glided through the city. My belly hurt, I laughed so hard. I finally noticed she wasn't in as good of a mood as I was. "Hey," I said, looking around, "shouldn't we hit the auto road? It's a faster way out of town."
"We aren't leaving town," she told me. "Official orders have come in, orders from Varys. You and I are to report to the local chapter house."
"Great." I tapped at my tapper, and my amusement died completely.
Whoever had ordered my arrest had given up on having the local hogs do it. They'd contacted my superiors this time. I was indeed ordered to report immediately to the Atlanta chapter house. For each of Earth's legions, there were both mustering halls and chapter houses, dirtside. The rest of our organization existed up in space, usually in the form of a large ship that served to transport troops to their assigned worlds. Mustering halls were big buildings constructed in the largest cities, usually one hall per sector. They handled recruitment and operated as ready stations for off-world missions. The major difference between a mustering hall and a chapter house was in scale and scope. Chapter houses were local sales outlets. A few veterans were posted there performing local recruitment for a single legion. The mustering halls were much bigger and were shared facilities used by all the legions. I'd only been to the Atlanta chapter house twice. Once was when I'd been thinking about joining up. The second time was to file my change of address info when I'd moved to Waycross. It was a dingy little place, and I wasn't looking forward to my third visit. My Legion's chapter house wasn't much to look at. From the outside, it could have been a shoe store or one of those places that sells second-hand electronic goods from off-world. There was a row of similar chapter houses repping various legions. There were about 15 in all that recruited locally and served the retired membership. Apparently, a lot of my brothers and sisters came from the southern states, and this office functioned as a hub for them. Natasha and I had suited up by the time we arrived. Smart clothing is great that way. You can dress in your car if you want to. All you have to do is wrap the cloth over yourself and wriggle a bit to let it worm its way around your butt and behind your back.
"What's our story?"
Natasha asked me as she parked. I eyed her worriedly. I felt confident I could bullshit my way past anything that was asked of us, but Natasha was a straight shooter. She'd done all right against the hogs, as she didn't respect them, but with real Legion Varus people, I knew it would be different for her. She liked telling the truth and doing as she was told when legit authority was involved. She'd helped me out back home and taken things way out on a limb. But I didn't trust her here. She'd crack under real pressure from one of our direct commanders.
Story? I asked. We've already got it down. Some goons came to the door. There was a struggle when they didn't identify themselves and things went badly. Don't change even the slightest detail.
She looked worried and she put a hand on the car door. The panel recognized her touch, flashed a colored light, and the lock clicked open.
Hey,
I said, reaching over and giving her a kiss on the cheek.
Don't worry. We'll be fine.
You murdered three men who someone sent to arrest you, James,
she said with a tight look on her face.
Yeah, well, they deserved it.
I agree. But what if Graves is in that building? What if he's a little smarter than that hog team? He'll know what happened. He knows us. He knows you.
Graves won't give a shit if I got into it with a few hogs.
Natasha sighed and rolled her eyes at me briefly. I got that sort of response often, especially from women. She climbed out, adjusted her uniform so it fit properly, and straightened her spine. I did the same, placing my beret on my head and tilting it at an appropriate angle. The smart uniforms worked to transform themselves into a crisp arrangement by crawling over our bodies. I led the way to the door, pushed it open, and stepped inside. At the front desk, I got my first surprise. I recognized the man who sat there. He was a rat-faced guy with close-cropped hair that glistened with additives. His name was Winslade, and he was Primus Turov's chief weasel. Winslade had his feet on the desk. I looked at him, and he smiled back with sharp white teeth.
"Hey, McGill," he said. "Nice of you to show up. You're wanted and back." He directed me with a casual stabbing of his thumb over his shoulder.
"Adjunct Winslade?" I asked. "What's going on, sir?"
"You'll find out. There's only one closed door in the back. Go see who's waiting inside."
Winslade gave me a shitty grin. I passed him by walking as coolly as possible. I wanted to maintain a solid front for Natasha's sake. She'd been rattled the minute we arrived in the parking lot, and there wasn't any point in giving her a weak vibe now. As we passed his desk, Winslade's skinny arm shot out, blocking Natasha's path. I felt like cracking him one, but I had to let it go.
"Not you, sweetie," he said. "You can wait out here and keep me company."
Walking to the door, I pushed it open and stepped inside. In the dim interior, I met none other than Primus Galina Turov herself. I should have expected this after seeing Adjunct Winslade out front, but somehow I hadn't figured it out. The Primus never came down to the sticks. She was a rare enough sight at the mustering hall up in Newark, but down here at the chapter house, no way. She took in my surprise with relish. I don't mean she was happy to see me, not by a long shot. Her joy was derived from my obvious dismay.
6 months of leave, and you've already forgotten how to salute?
Turov asked. I jumped to attention and gave her a crisp salute. She didn't deserve it, but rules were rules. Turov and I had never seen eye to eye. She was a small, shapely woman who was older than she looked and a whole lot meaner. She'd been born a rule stickler while I'd been born a rule breaker. I figured we were destined never to get along. She made a point of toying with her tablet before addressing me. I stood there staring at the wall behind her head, waiting. Finally, she set the tablet aside and leaned back in her chair.
"I suppose you're wondering why I ordered you to come here, correct?"
"No, sir," I said. A frown flickered over her features. She paused, but finally had to ask.
"You expected to find me here?"
"No, sir. I meant that I'm wondering who sent those three hogs, excuse me, hegemony officials, to my door this morning."
"Ah, that," she said, nodding. "I sent them."
For the first time since I'd entered the tiny, dim-lit office, I met her eyes directly. She'd gotten my full attention. "Hegemony troops? On the eve of a critical vote concerning our independence? Can I ask why, sir?" Turov smiled and steepled her fingers. Her nails were blood red, but cut short.
"Because you are who you are, James. I was depending on that. Thank you for the assist. Now, if you would kindly get the hell out of my office and onto the lifter waiting at the Atlanta spaceport, we can all move on with our lives."
I was confused. I'd expected a good reaming at the very least. But here she was, all smiles. Why had she bothered to come down here in the first place? Just to gloat about something? It seemed like she'd thought she'd won some kind of victory, but I was baffled as to what the prize was. Then the implications of her new orders sank in. "Sir," I asked in confusion, "did you say there's a lifter at the spaceport?"
"Yes. Get on it. Legion Varys is mustering out. Immediately."
I hesitated. While I watched, she stood up and turned around. She removed a beret and jacket from the rack behind the desk. She put them on, slowly, almost languidly. As she turned away to gather her things, my eyes roved over her. I have to admit, although I was a young guy who usually didn't stare at women over 30, I'd always kept Turov on my radar. She liked to wear her uniforms at the tightest, most form-fitting setting, maybe even a notch tighter than that if the truth were to be told. She turned back around and smiled. It was as if she'd put on a little show, and she'd known how it would affect me.
"Admiring my new patch, I see," she said. "Or maybe the sun's caught your eye."
My eyes flew wide.
I'd been staring at her butt, naturally. Now that she mentioned it, however, she did have two gold suns on her collar and the wrong Legion patch adhered to her shoulder. Among the officer ranks, suns were the top insignia that could be achieved. Once you got to suns, it was just a matter of how many you had. I realized that Turov was no longer a primus. She'd moved up two ranks to the level of an imperator. She could command her own legion now if she was assigned one, or even multiple legions. The promotion wasn't the biggest shocker for me, though. Her legion patch was what got me the most. Where the wolf's head of Legion Varus should have been riding proudly on her shoulder, there was now a blue-green globe. I opened my mouth, but no sound came out for a second. When I managed to speak at last, I spoke rudely. You bugged out? You joined hegemony?
That's hardly an appropriate expression of congratulations, she snapped.
Sorry, sir.
I've moved up in rank. There can only be one tribune in Legion Varus, and that job is taken by Drusus. The council decided not to give me the Legion, but rather to move me into hegemony.
I understand, sir, I said. And I did understand. She'd been bucking for rank from the very first moment I'd met her, and now she'd finally gotten it. I'm a slow country boy sometimes, but today the light was going on inside my thick, dark skull. I recalled all the times she and Winslade had made a huge production of filming the aftermath of battle. I'd also heard she wasn't above doctoring reports to make it seem as if every victory was due to her leadership. She wasn't the kind who liked to fight or even command in a battle. In fact, I don't think I'd ever seen her fire a weapon or man a line in combat.
Well, specialist?
Turov asked, gesturing toward the door. One more question, sir. She nodded. I understand you got rank and I congratulate you, but what's happening to Varus? We're supposed to vote on our independence tonight and—
About that, she said, walking to the door and opening it. I know you're not the type to take good advice, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Vote to disband Varus. Don't stand against what must be. Independent legions are a thing of the past. They're unwelcome anachronisms. Maybe you'll be allowed to keep your patches and unit names, but you'll soon be melded into hegemony, no matter how you vote today. I believe the plan is to assign each legion a number, with the names becoming nicknames rather than official designations.
I was horrified. I had no interest in becoming a hog from the 199th or whatever they assigned us. I don't think that's such a good idea, I began. Sudden anger tightened her face.
McGill, you've had your warning, and you've had your explanations. Now get the hell out.
She stood to one side, holding open the door. I saluted and marched past her into the hallway. She didn't bother to return the salute. Instead, she slammed the door so fast it almost hit me in the ass. I walked down the passage, trying to look on the bright side of things. At least Primus Turov, Imperator Turov, that is, was out of my hair. I should be celebrating. But somehow things didn't feel quite right. True to his word, Winslade was out in the lobby chatting up Natasha. She wore a polite but bored look on her face. Winslade didn't seem to have noticed. He was disappointed when I showed up. We've been ordered to muster out, I told Natasha. Can you drive me to the spaceport?
Sure,
she said, but she looked as confused as I'd been a few minutes earlier. In the meantime, Winslade had stopped chattering and was now looking smug. He pulled a jacket out from behind his desk.
Secret's out, he said. I guess I can show you this.
There was a globe patch on his jacket's shoulder. You too, huh? I asked. I sneered. I couldn't help it. True loyalty is a damned rare commodity, I guess. Winslade's expression transformed in an instant. He hunched forward and showed me his teeth.
You'll switch tonight if you're smart, McGill.
Don't even participate in the vote. That's a ruse. The fix is in. If you vote the wrong way, you'll lose rank and be transferred to hegemony in the end anyway. Natasha eyed him in concern.